So people who drive me to airport always have a lot of stress. I said today will relieve them of the stress, but apparently it won't be.
At the most, we will get you for one more day.
Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai.
I am Vipaschit. The translation is, this omniscient one means this consciousness. The pronoun is I am. I means this. So pronoun this is used for something that is evident. This book. So what is evident? For that we said, otherwise we said that. That which is remote, we said that. For something which is present, here, now, evident, we said this. So this vipaschit, this omniscient one, this consciousness. So even though word is omniscient, again omniscience also are of two kinds. One is omniscience, which is at the level of mind. Other is omniscience, which is Swarupa, the essential nature. So Ishvara is omniscient, because Ishvara possesses total mind called Maya. And therefore, Ishvara, or Saguna Brahma, is omniscient. He knows everything in general, everything in particular. And so, Sarvajnya, yes, Sarvajnya, Sarvavit. Mundaka Upanishad says, yes, Sarvajnya, one who knows everything in general, Sarvavit, one who knows everything in particular. So that is omniscience in a primary sense. What we mean by all knowledge is that. But then other omniscience is where that which illumines all the knowledge. The consciousness is that which doesn't have the knowerness. So when you talk of omniscient Lord, then he is the one who knows everything. There is a knowerness involved there. Consciousness doesn't have knowerness. So it just illumines everything. By way of illumining everything, and since all forms of knowledge, general and particular, is illumined by consciousness, because without the light of consciousness, no knowledge can take place. In that sense, consciousness is called omniscient in a secondary sense. A wise person also is called omniscient. Not as Ishvara is. Ishvara is omniscient in primary sense. Because all particular knowledge takes place at the level of mind. You say in the morning, for knowing a given object, having name and form, you require sense organs and the mind. So particular object requires mind and sense organs. Ishvara has all the minds and all sense organs. Therefore, he has all particular knowledge. But consciousness doesn't have mind, meaning that it transcends the mind, sense organs, it illumines everything. So you can call it consciousness, omniscient in a secondary sense, not in the sense of having knowerness. So consciousness cannot be called witness also, really. Although witness consciousness, we say that. But even witnessing also is a role, and role always requires a mind. So to be witness in a primary sense, you should have mind. Consciousness, not witness in that sense, but we do use the word witness to distinguish it from what is witnessed. So we use the word witness, meaning sakshi, subject, illuminator. These words we do use for atma or consciousness, to distinguish it from what is witnessed, what is objectified, what is insentient. Ultimately, even the witnessness, you know, so that also has to be dropped. Because even witnessing also comes, is a role which comes because of the functioning through mind. So ultimately, consciousness is not even witness. Because witness also is relative to what is witnessed. subject also is relative to the object. Thus, all the words that we use are always relative to something. There is no word that can really reveal absolute or unrelated. There are debates about the words, but this is one of the things, that every word always is relative. When you say limitless, it is a reference to limited. Good with reference to bad. Right with reference to wrong. Whatever, everything has some kind of some relation, something is related to something. No word can give something absolute. That means that no word can really express what the truth is. Truth or Brahman cannot be the word meaning or the literal meaning of any word. Even not of word Brahman also, by the way. Even word Atma also does not literally describe Atma. Word Brahman also does not literally mean Brahman. Brahman is the principle. Brahman is the word closest to expressing that principle. Well, ultimately, then word also has to go understand. So, yato vacho nivardante, Upanishad says, is that from which the words along with the thoughts come back, meaning that Brahman is not the meaning of the word. No word can, if whatever word can describe is always going to be relative and limited. Then why do you use word? That's all the vehicle we have. So then Vedanta has another nice truth. You know, that Brahman is the meaning of the word Brahman, but not Vachyartha, Lakshyartha, the implied meaning. So Vachyartha or the verbal or direct meaning is given up. And then what remains cannot be called meaning, but it's called Lakshyartha. Why all this? Because the translation says omniscient one. Yeah. Because I have looked at this translation, I have allowed this word, but that's what Vipaschit means. Vipaschit means a knower, in this case omniscient one, but when the word omniscient is used for the sake, for denoting self or consciousness, it is not omniscient in the primary sense that he knows everything simultaneously. No. Consciousness just is. It shines. You cannot say it even illumines. The sun is, and sun shines. And the world gets illumined in presence of sun, therefore we say sun illumines the world. You follow? To illumine is a verb. And verb always involves some action. So to say that sun illumines the world, what it means is the sun is the agent of the act of illumination. Means sun performs the karma or act of illumination, and every action always involves will. Willfully doing something. Meaning sun willfully involves, no, sun just shines. The world simply gets illumined in presence of sun. But because the world gets illumined, therefore you have to have an illuminator. So the sun is illuminator. Sun is called illuminator, not from the standpoint of sun, but from the standpoint of the world which is illumined. We call God creator, not from God's point of view. Lord Krishna says, Tasya kartarayama vidyakal, may you know me to be the creator of the universe, but really not the creator also. Because universe is creation. So we have to look for a creator. That's why buck stops with him. And therefore he is called creator. World is an effect, so we look for the cause. It's called the cause of the world. Creator of the world. We find the universe is sustained, it's systematic in order. So he is the sustainer, he is the ordainer. So Brahman also gets all these designations. On account of looking at Brahman from a standpoint of the universe, because universe is ordained or universe is in order, etc. And so there is someone who maintains that order, and therefore he is ordained. Creation, always the creator must have the knowledge of what is to be created, endeavor, universe is creation, so creator must have all knowledge, so is, so is all fine. But when it comes to the ultimate nature of Brahman or God or whatever, even omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence, all these attributes also ultimately do not apply there. So we say Saguna Brahman, Brahman with attributes, where all the attributes apply in a primary sense, because all attributes belong to Maya. So Brahman functioning through Maya is omniscience, omnipotent, etc. So if you ask Brahman, hey, what do you know? I don't know. If we call a rope as a substrate on the snake, you ask the rope. So you are substrate. What substrate? What snake? Because there's no snake. Snake doesn't exist as far as the rope is concerned, you follow? You call rope the cause of snake, from the standpoint of snake, rope gets all kinds of designation perhaps. So understand that what is absolute doesn't have any kind of an attribute at all. It is free from all the attributes, free from all relativity. So that is the vipassit, the consciousness, the self, Brahman, truth, reality, God, whatever you want to call. All of these words have different meanings, but they will all amount to the same thing. Each word has its own meaning. So they are not synonyms, words that are used. The reality and self and truth, all of these may have their own literal meanings, but they all amount to the same thing. So, hey, Nachiketa, you are asking that when this man dies, does anything remain? Certainly something remains, because there is something that does not die. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit avipaschit. This vipaschit, the consciousness, the self, na jayate, is never born, na mriyate, it never dies. When you say it is never born, so birth is of something that doesn't exist at this moment and comes into existence the next moment. The child is born, when do we say that? That child did not exist, at least in this world, before that moment, and comes into being. So birth applies to something that did not exist before the birth and comes into existence at a given point in time. And technically you can say that when the prior non-existence ends, and that is where the birth, So, but anyway, what is meant is that when there is no birth means that there never was a time when consciousness or Atma was not. Always was. For something to be born, there was a time when it was not, and then it came to existence. That phenomenon is called birth. When you say self never is born, that means that there never was a time when it was not, it always was. You follow? Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, Natveva jatunasam natvam neme janatipaha nachayvana bhavishyamaha sarve vayamatahparam. Hey Arjuna, there never was a time when I was not, Lord Krishna says. Already you are God, so that's okay. Never was a time when you were not. I'm something, he said. Then there was a time when all of these people were not. So Lord Krishna means that we all were. It means that there's no birth. And there never will be a time, nachanaiva bhavishyama sarve, atah param, after the so-called death, there will not be a time when we will not be, we will always be, meaning that there is no death. All of this is said because there is birth and death also. Or because I have the notion that I was born and notion that I'm going to die, which refers to that, this is said. Because the Vedantic teaching is meant to help us become free from false notions, which are the products of ignorance. And these notions are a source of sorrow. There was born, sorrow. I'm going to die, sorrow. I'm young, sorrow. Child, sorrow. Or anything that I add to I means sorrow. So young I like. Child, I'm happy. Ask the child. That always has to become big, poor thing, you know. And young fellow think, I wish I was child, you know, so nice it was. Now there's so much responsibility on my head. Everybody feels that they should be different from what they are, generally speaking. And so the moment we add something to I am, whether it is born, dying, young, old, we are only adding what? Sorrow, because each one of them is limited. Anything that is added to I am is going to be limited. And therefore, I am so and so, that thought can never be free from a sense of limitation. Every notion about I is accompanied with also sense of limitation. And it is limitation that causes sorrow. Not child doesn't cause sorrow. And youth also, and birth also doesn't cause sorrow. Death also doesn't cause sorrow. Then what causes sorrow? When death is connected to I, that's when the sorrow comes. When birth is connected to I, then the sorrow comes. Merely birth and death, I mean, this don't affect us. So if I'm very clear that birth also belongs to the body and death also belongs to the body, and that birth of body doesn't mean birth of I, and death of body does not mean death of I have no problem. I have only problem with myself. So whenever anything gets connected to I, then only there is a problem. Happiness also is when the I is connected, and unhappiness also is when the I is connected. Somebody won the lottery, so what does it mean to me? I won the lottery is a different thing. Somebody got first rank in the whole university, okay. My son got, then it's a different thing. When I gets connected. Similarly, unhappiness also. So whenever anything is joined with I was born, I'm young, I'm old, I'm dying, I'm going to die, all of this adds only a sense of limitation. And where limitation is, there the sorrow is. So this teaching is meant to help us become free from all the sorrow. Because when birth is associated with I, sorrow. Death is associated with I, joined with I, sorrow. Na jayate mriyate va vipassit. He nachiketa vipassit. Consciousness is not born, cannot be born. It doesn't have something that is required to be born. You need something, you know, some qualification to be born and dying also. So this is not, even Bhagavan can't be called creator also. Creator also requires some kind of qualification. He doesn't have that. So, no birth and death. So where is birth? Birth is in the body and death is in the body. That means you are not the body. What is meant is that body is not you. Because we see, who says I am not born? I don't have birth. I am celebrating my birthday every year. And I am writing my will and preparing for the death also. That is all right. That is because of identification, lumping the body along with I. The birth of the body is taken to be birth of I. The death of the body is taken to be death of I. And that is enough. You don't need anything more than this to be unhappy. Nobody needs to do anything to me for me to be unhappy. All I need to do is to join this stuff. That's all. That's enough. Then you can pour something. You know, you can add some salt on my bone. That's what the world can do. But basically, this has to be there. The core of the problem is there. Nayam kutaschin na bhuva kaschida. So the explanation is given. How come you are not born? How come there is no birth for consciousness? How come there is no death in consciousness? In vipassit. Nayam kutaschit. Because this one did not come from anything. Kutaschit in the fifth case. I am na kutaschit. Meaning that it did not originate from anything. So origination means birth. Understand. But vipassit or consciousness self did not originate from anything. So it doesn't have birth because it did not originate from anything. It did not originate in anything, therefore there is no birth. Then, na bhuva kaschit, nor did anything originate from it. So neither it is an effect, so effect originates from cause. Like pot is an effect and clay is a cause, so pot originates from clay, then whatever originates is limited in time and whatever originates will perish someday. Pot has a beginning, originated from clay, was created into their world, someday it will perish. Even the whole universe also, since it has a beginning, it will have an end. Simple rule. Whatever begins has to have an end. Whatever is born will die. When? Whenever. If Atma originated, then someday it will also come to an end. No, Atma did not originate from anything. That means it is no birth, nor anything, that means not an effect. An Atma, nothing originated from Atma. Nothing originates from, meaning is not the cause. So pot originates from clay. So pot is called effect. Clay, from clay pot originates. So clay is called cause. You follow? Clay is the cause, pot is the effect. What is the effect? That which originates from cause. What is cause? That from which effect originates. So it said that the self or the consciousness did not originate from anything, meaning that it is not an effect. It has no beginning. It will not have end. Not anything, but alright, you say that God is the cause of the creation. So whole creation emerged from God. Is it not so? No, if that is also not so. God did not give rise to any creation. Because what happens is, when something originates, for example, pot is made from clay, what happens to clay? There's a lump of clay from which you make pot. The cause is lump of clay. What happens to the cause? Goes. For cause becoming the effect, there's no more the cause. So if God is the cause of creation, there will be no more God because it has become creation. So, neither is Atma the effect, nor is Atma the cause, neither did God originate from anything, nor did anything originate from that. What about this universe, Swami? It's called creation. Which universe? Which universe talking about? That's how Vedantins will ask, you know. What the world, Swami? How to explain it? It's a creation. Which world? What do you perceive? What do you perceive? What do you mean I perceive? I perceive this world of names and forms. What's the name and form? Take a pot, a name and form. What is pot? It's pot, Swami. You think it's pot, I think it is clay. Suppose. What you call pot, suppose I say it's clay. In the olden days, the Swami used to have a golden chain. Oh, it is gold-looking chain anyway. I don't think it's true, but anyway. So he'll always produce. What is this? This is a chain. Suppose there is a person who has never seen a chain from some village. He knows gold all right. Never seen a chain. You ask him, what is it? He'll say, this is gold. So can you say that he's wrong? Is it chain or gold? Both are right, but one is more right than the other. Because one is more lasting than the other. So, the gold is more correct. Is it gold? Well, somebody says, no, it's molecules. Molecules, somebody can say, is atoms. Electrons. Subatomic particles. Ultimately what? It disappears, understand? When they keep on splitting the matter, and matter disappears. Nothing remains. So what is the ultimate substance of this? What is the ultimate substance of anything? This is not a simple, no, this is an important thing, a serious thing, I'm not joking. Look at this question, what is the substance from which thing is made? Clay is a substance. What is its substance? Molecules are substance. What is its substance? Atoms are substance. Its substance. Electrons substance. This much all I know, you know. But then suppose you know more. Then all kinds of particles are there. Boson, whatever the last particle. This is what last we know. What is the substance, you tell me?
Consciousness.
Huh?
Yes.
Consciousness.
So, when you want to find the substance of which this is made, no substance is left, is not so? Then you call it energy, because what else you have to call something? It's inference, all this inference. What is energy? What is substance? Consciousness. But consciousness is not a substantial thing. It doesn't have weight, it doesn't have height, it doesn't have any substantiality, and then all this. No tangibility. How did this whole tangible universe come from something that is not tangible? You know? A substantial universe, how can it come from something not substantial? How?
Superimposition.
So Vedantin's illustration will be, where, you know, what is the substance of the snake? It's a projection. So what is the whole universe? A projection. Which of course science is in agreement with us. When they call it relative, it means it is projection. So, had it been real creation, then Brahman would have been real cause. But it's an apparent creation. It's an appearance. Call it projection or appearance. If it was a real snake, then of course there would have to be a real cause. But it's just an apparent snake. So rope snake example gives us that's a model to explain the mithya. What appears to be there, but not really there. Vedanta says, just because something appears doesn't mean that it is there. In the dream everything appears, you know, but nothing is there. Sounds very, you know, this Swami is all good to talk, you know. It's all right. It's talk, if nothing else. If things bother you, then you can talk like this so it will disappear. You follow? When something bothers us, ask, what is it? This knowledge can utilize at least when we become very sad. What makes me sad? That's what Lord Krishna said to Arjuna. First, Lord Krishna says to Arjuna, Tam Stitikshastva. Here, Arjuna, whenever you experience the world, pleasure and pain, heat and cold, happiness, it all happens. Let it happen. So when that mind, let it happen, comes, when you are not affected, then understand what is, now you see, what is it that you think is bothering you? Na sato vinyate bhava, na bhava vinyate sata. Really speaking, Arjuna, what is real can never be non-existent, and what is unreal never exists. So what you think is giving you trouble doesn't really exist. All of this can be useful. It's not theoretical. I mean, it's not just academic. Vedanta is meant to be useful. You use practically and you are welcome to use it in every situation. Yeah, particularly when you are, you know, when something bothers, something makes us sad. That's the way. Then you can dismiss everything. Rightfully dismiss everything. Oh, he told me something. Oh, who is he? Mithya. His projection. So he's telling also his projection. So dukkha also his projection. Swami, by saying it doesn't go away, but his impact will be reduced, you know. That fellow may still, because my mind still doesn't understand what mithya is, it uses the word. But still the impact that is created, you know, will be much reduced. But when Upanishad says, Nayam kutaschinna bhavuva kaschit, it did not originate from anything, nor did anything originate from that. It is neither the cause nor the effect. Meaning that, though, actually, the reason why this is being told is because Nachiketa had asked, Anyatra dharmat anyatra dharman, anyatra smat krita kritada. That which is beyond dharma and adharma, that is beyond cause and effect. So says, it is neither cause nor an effect. Meaning there is no cause and effect in the ultimately. You know what it means is, the cause and effect are simply our thoughts. And there is Mandrika Kariga, you know, he shows you this cause is all in motion in your mind, that this is a cause and this is an effect. We will not go into that kind of a thing, but you know, because they will get distracted. But the point is, this is just to find out to you how Vedanta thinks. So, giving Riya, this is, he did this. So, he is a cause. What cause? So, then you ask, what is meant by cause? Is something related to the effect? If you take, give Riya an effect, then the reality is cause. If the cause is real, then the effect can be real. So, if you, if true Vedanta can really resolve things like that, we won't be able to resolve it because we are too emotional. No? You have to set aside your emotions. Then this will work. All this will work when emotions don't come in them. But this my spouse and my mother and my father, then once that comes, then you know, it is difficult to become objective. But if you are truly objective, you can create distance, you can say yes. But this is told to Nachiketa. He is ready for this, you know, for saying that there is no cause, there is no effect, there is no birth there for him. Because cause perishes after giving rise to effect, like the clay lump is no more there. If Atma really was a cause, then there would be no more Atma. So there is no, it's not a cause, not the effect. So what does it mean? Second line says, Ajo Nitya Shashvatoyam Purana. Aja, it is birthless. Ja means Janma, means birth. A is a negative particle. Aja means that which is not born, means that is birthless. Aja. Nitya. Nitya means that which does not, Nitya Avinashi, does not suffer from destruction, meaning it is deathless. Ajo Nitya. Shashvata Purana. Shashvata Apakshaya Varjita. That which does not decay. Shashvata decayless. Purana growthless. So that's the translation is decayless, growthless. There's no decay, there's no growth. All of these is said, because I think that I'm suffering from this, that is why. I think that I was born. I think I'm going to die. Swami, I'm getting old. All right. So he says, decayless, growthless. Something is getting old, but not what you think. Something is born. So what is happening in one place are superimposed on another one. And then we could draw our conclusion. So how our notions about ourselves are created is that birth is there someplace, but not where I think it is. It's in the body. And what is in the body is habitually superimposed upon the eyes. I am born. I was born. I am dying. I am fat. I am lean. All of these are problems. Fat also is a problem, and lean also is a problem, and tall also is a problem, and short also is a problem. Everybody is a problem. Tall people also are, you know, the people who are not tall will make fun of him, and tall people make fun of short. See, everybody makes fun of everybody else. Any qualification can be made, you know, in a basis or an issue, you know, to make fun of you. For you to feel that I'm humiliated, I'm not respected, etc. This right wipes out everything. All complexes are born because of superimposition. And these are only gross body talked about, but it also includes subtle body, meaning that it includes sense organs, mind. So we habitually superimpose the attributes of those upon the self and then suffer from a sense of limitation. The limitedness is not real, otherwise we have to accept it. Swami, you people just dismiss everything. So what? You mean by dismissing problem goes away?
It's not dismissing, it is understanding. It's not dismissing the birth, where birth is there. That would not make, that's called denial. No. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Sharire hanyamane, when the body is killed or afflicted. Han means to kill or to afflict somebody, to injure. Himsa means killing or even injuring also, affliction also is called, falls in the category of himsa or han. Na hanyate. When the body is killed, that is not killed. Body is affected, that is not affected. Body is afflicted, the self is not afflicted. What is not serious, Swami? He insulted me. He honored me. We get afflicted. Somebody insults, I'm affected. Somebody honors, again I'm affected. Both are problems, you know. Because if I can be elated because you praise me, then next it quite happens that, you know, if you don't praise me, I can be equally then unhappy also. So why does he say, what does it mean when it says that the self is not afflicted when the body is afflicted? What's the relationship between the body and the self? So intimate, and still says when body is afflicted, self is not afflicted. So what's the relationship? Something similar to the relationship between a costume role and the actor. So this body has a place in our life. Body is an important thing to live our life. Vedanta doesn't say the body is not there, is not, no. Vedanta simply reveals the reality of the body. It doesn't condemn the body, understand? People think that Vedanta claims, I am not the person. In fact, I remember many years ago, this lady, you know, even though she was sick, she would not take medication. But I'm not the body. So what? So I'm not the body. You're going to die or what? And so sometimes this is wrongly understood. I'm not the body. You're not the body, so I'm not the pain. Doesn't mean that I will not take that. I'm not the car. I still take care of it. Is it not? I'm not this recorder. But we still take care of it. Similarly, I'm not the body, so what? Doesn't mean you should not take care of it. That's not the point. But that body is in the place of the costume. And so actor can be playing the role of a beggar. And all kinds of manner, all honor, dishonor can come. He can be dishonored. He can be insulted. And he can be given 10 rupees and he's elated also. But all of these, elation and depression, honor and dishonor, up to at what level? How far do they go? They only go to the costume. They do not penetrate the costume. They do not in any way go to the actor. When the beggar gets $10 and he's happy, you think that actor is going to get happy? No. And if beggar is insulted there and so forth, there are tears in his eyes. You know, actor, they think, oh, how nicely I'm showing tears. As long as the distance is very clear. There's no separation between beggar and actor in terms of space or time, because where the beggar is, there the actor is. When the beggar is, then the actor is. Separation, not in space and time, instant separation in knowledge. What is the knowledge? I am the actor. What is beggar? Superimposition upon actor. Actor is satyam, real. What is beggar? Mithya. A superimposition or a costume. And so all the mana, apmana, even birth, everything happens at what level? At the level of costume. If somebody insults the beggar, the insult goes up to what level? Only up to costume. Does not penetrate further. If it does, then there is a problem. Sometimes it does. Every day this fellow is, you know, he's sitting on the roadside and begging and he's spread his cloth in front of him and people throw some coins. Usual thing. The passers-by, some of them give him a coin. Some people don't look at him. Some people look at him in a different way. Some people insult him. Everything has to go through a beggar. It's a routine thing. What is his role? He's not supposed to react to anything. But today something happened. And then according to the script, this passerby, you know, he used a bad word for this. That was a routine. And this fellow just got up and gave him a punch. Got excited. What happened? Actor became the beggar. That's called identification. Then all the problems of the beggar become the problems of the actor. All the problems of role become the problems of actor when there is identification. Otherwise, they all remain restrained at the level of the role. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Yes, the body is afflicted, no doubt about that. What is body? Body is like the costume. All afflictions are on the role, at the level of costume. The self is unconnected. The costume, the beggar cannot be without the actor. The actor is independent of the beggar, right? B is equal to A, but A is not equal to B. The beggar is not independent of the actor, but the actor is independent of the beggar. A very interesting, very important equation. So it says here, na hanyate hanyamane sharire. When the body is afflicted, the self does not get afflicted. There is a distance. What's the distance? The distance of the reality. That body and the costume is mithya. This consciousness, self, is satyam. Doesn't get affected by what happens at the level of mithya. For a wise person also, the description will apply. That So, wise person is traditionally described as manapamanayostulya tulyo mitrari pakshayoho. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes the wise person in many places. That he is equanimous, or he has equanimity with reference to honor and dishonor, success and failure, this, that, and all pairs of opposites. He is unaffected because no identification. So, this is answering question of Nachiketa. That there is a doubt whether something remains after the death of this body. He says, yes, something remains. What remains? It is the real thing remains. There is something that is subject to death, but there is something that does not die. And then the discussion continues. What does it mean? When it is said that there is no birth and no death and no growth and no decay in self, means self is changeless, you know. Atma is changeless. So Lord Krishna says in the Gita, Deinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara praptihi. Here Arjuna, look, just as for this dehi, for the indweller, there is childhood, there is youth, there is old age. So when in the childhood, in the youth, in the old age, one interesting thing is, that this old person is talking to his grandchild and telling the story, you know, of his childhood. He is talking about the time when he was listening to his grandfather. So he's talking to his grandchild and telling the story that he learned from his grandfather, you know. So I, who as a grandchild listened to the story from my grandfather, is I who is now telling the story to my grandchild. The I is the same, isn't it? The I that was a child is the same. There is continuity, isn't it? If that I is gone and new I has come, then there is no continuity, no memory. But experience shows that the I remains consistent in the same in all the experiences. It's a connecting link to all experience. Everything else changes. Childhood comes and goes. Childhood dies and youth is born. Youth is gone and old age is born. You know, and old age also will die. And next body will come. And then into all the changes, the self of the consciousness is changeless. So understand, this is much a big deal. Because kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam, doership, all of these are changes. That means that there is no kartrutvam, no doership in Atma. No bhoktrutvam, no enjoyership in Atma. I am neither a karta nor a bhokta. I am neither a villain nor a victim. Who is the villain? One who does something. One does something, all can be a villain, isn't it? When we wind up doing something which is wrong or violent, then we are called a villain. Who is the victim? Who becomes an object of somebody else's violence? But here it says, Nahanyan is changeless. That means there is no kartrutvam, no bhoktrutvam. I am neither a villain nor a victim. Both of these cause a lot of problems. A villain also is unhappy and a victim also is unhappy. Out of anger I become a villain, all right, then I do something, but later on it bothers me all the time. Sense of guilt. So villain suffers from sense of guilt and victim suffers from sense of hurt all the time. They account for all miseries in our life. Atma is changeless. Hanta chet manyate hantum, hatas chet manyate hatam, ubhautonavi. So same, similar verses come in Gita. If somebody thinks that I am killing, and some other one says, I am killed, both of them do not know. Nayam hanti nanyate, the self neither kills nor is being killed. Is neither karta nor bhokta, neither the agent of action nor the object of an action. When I am doing something, there is always a possibility that I may do something which is not proper, is going to create guilt in me. When you do something which I judge as not proper, creates hurt in me. All is because taking Atma is changing. Karta, Bhokta. So since all of these conclusions or complexes on our part, which are the cause of all of our suffering, so that is being addressed here. This simple knowledge can release us from all the sorrow. But Swami, I want to be happy. When sorrow releases sorrow, then happiness is automatically there. This cloud of sorrow is simply veiling the sun of happiness. When that goes away, nothing separate is to be done for being happy. The sun is already shining. The clouds are only veiling that sun. You remove the cloud, then the shine will come. You don't have to do some separate thing to again, illumine the sun. So thus, in answer to the questions of Nachiketa, Yamaraja begins his discourse with a bang in this manner. So real Upanishad begins from now, you can say. The Upanishad words describe self-knowledge, that self-knowledge begins from this point. So far all the preparation for that. It takes a lot of preparation, I guess, for us to have the opportunity to listen to that and to benefit from that. So the clock is in front of me and Zarina also is sitting before me. So we have to conclude with this. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Vadarayanam Sutra Bhashyakrutau Vande Bhagavantau Manapunaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Veda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadhyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru.